So, interestingly enough, I was not entirely without advance warning that I would be preaching, because last night when I was dreaming, Karen was in the dream and told me that Darcy would not be able to preach today. So, amongst a dream that was very, very not Renfrew Church themed. My dreams are usually ridiculous, and this was a ridiculous dream as well. I think it was driving around in cars, but being chased by monsters. But in the middle of that, Karen was there and said, Darcy won't be able to preach today. And then what woke me up this morning was my watch buzzing saying, you've got a phone call from P. Darce, as he is listed in my phone. And he was saying, hello, I cannot preach today. So I actually woke up with that exact thought. So I went back to one of the old sermons I preached a while ago and got Pastor Darcy to set it up. And then I actually read it, and it was awful. So I just quickly redid it because it was really bad. And so we'll go with something a little fresher than that. Let's turn to John chapter 15. Wonderful passage that is one that I think we think of often, just because the language that is used here is so warm and personal. And it's because this is part of Jesus's personal talk with the disciples. They're all sitting in a very close room together. And finally, it's just the 11 and Jesus. So the one who is the false brother has left, and it's finally just the 11 and Jesus, and he really talks heart to heart with them and says some truths that they definitely didn't understand and were probably absolutely terrifying for him to say in such a close, personal, clear way, because he expresses things so clearly in this talk, but he gives them also incredible encouragement. We're just going to read from verse 1 to 11 of chapter 15 of John. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers. And the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be full. Let's pray. Dear Lord, thank you for these words this morning. May they be something that touches our hearts directly, Lord. May you clear away the bushes of anxiety in my heart, and also whatever anyone else is feeling this morning, may they be able to just hear the word and not my own words, but the words of your Spirit and the words of your truth. In your precious name, amen. So, As I was thinking about of this idea of abiding with Jesus as he is talking here, song came to mind, which is such a not popular song that I don't think any of you would know it, probably. It's like an old Henry Mancini song from before I was born, and it's called Whistling Away the Dark. And it's probably quite obscure. But anyways, it talks about the idea of you're walking home from school, and it's getting later and later and later, and then suddenly you realize you're lost. And there's nobody around you, you're in a new neighborhood, and so you whistle just to feel like there's maybe something around you, that you're not alone, you're just whistling, because the sound comforts you of your own whistling. And then it postulates that maybe in our own ways, as we go through life, maybe we're all in some ways kind of whistling in the dark. We all do feel alone in our lives, and we do feel that we're just kind of stumbling through life trying to figure out things, but we feel largely alone. However, the song goes on, hold my hand, let's whistle together, essentially is the, yeah, we may not know where we're going, but as long as we're together whistling in the dark, it's going to be okay. And in many ways, we as Christians, we're in a dark world. The world, and I think it seems like it's increasing in darkness, but also we do have to remember that in the past, you know, there would be a time when, like, the Ottomans would just come and kill an entire city full of Christians. So it's always been horrifically dark. The world has been. And Christians have always, right since there were Christians, right since these 11 are meeting in this room with Jesus, he's preparing them to go out into the dark. But not alone. You will not be alone, no matter where you are in your life. Because Jesus says, you abide with me, I will abide with you. So, abiding with Jesus is the key to persevering in this dark world. So, he uses this metaphor of the vine and us being the branches. So, this metaphor sort of persists through this passage. So my first point is abiding, we need to abide in the spiritual vine. So, my first point is drawn sort of from the beginning and also sort of from the preceding context. Why do I say abide in the spiritual vine? Well, Jesus isn't here physically right now, is he? He is not promising that if we do some sort of, sort of calling spell, if we act or live really good, or you know, there's a certain religion that some of us may be very familiar with, where when you eat the communion bread and wine, he's actually there physically. And so it would be great, the idea, oh yeah, you know, if we could do something, maybe he could be here physically. Maybe I could experience some physical presence of him here. He actually says we don't need that because we have the Spirit. But also, primarily, we should not expect that. We should not expect his physical presence. And for the disciples who actually had his physical presence, like, we experienced that loss because we have, and everyone has this inbuilt desire to be with God. And they expressed it in all sorts of different ways. The disciples actually got to walk around with God. So the departure of God, we can't even imagine what that blow was like when he left. That feeling of, he used to walk with me, he was my friend, he's not here anymore. And so it's very interesting that he uses the word abide, abiding, because he's not physically abiding anymore. And that would have been a thing that they were used to, was him physically abiding with them. But yet, he says, abide, live with me. And they're like, we're not living with you anymore, apparently. And in fact, just in the previous chapter, verses 5 and 6, Thomas says to Jesus, Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way? Because Jesus has said very clearly, I'm leaving. And Thomas is saying, in his own way, don't go, abide with me. Abide with us. Stay. And Jesus now says in verse 15, I am going to stay. It's going to be in a different way. But spiritually, I will always abide with you if you abide with me. Now, this is difficult. Abiding with Jesus spiritually is difficult. Because obviously, when I live with my wife. That's not a shocker. Remembering that I live with my wife is extraordinarily easy. Because who's the person with the heavy leg in the bed? It's my wife. She's right there. It's really easy for me to remember, there she is. She's physically there. And there's also the signs that she's there. Magically, things are cleaner. How did that happen? I left a thing there. It's gone. But that's the evidence that my wife has been through. So, we don't necessarily get that same physical feeling that Jesus is with us. And that's hard, isn't it? It's hard. Day in and day out, the world has all sorts of things. Sometimes it's really dark. Sometimes it's just distracting. Never mind dark. Sometimes you're just having a good time and realizing, oh, I didn't think about him. And it was just because I was having a good time, not a bad time. So how do we remember that Jesus is with us? In 1 Corinthians 13:12, it says, we see in a mirror dimly. And that's just going to be the experience of our life. So obviously, our modern mirrors are awesome. But for before anyone invented reflective glass, mirrors were terrible. And so when you looked in them, you did not see exactly what is behind you, but with just slightly less light. You saw a very dim, hazy reflection. So everyone who was reading that would know exactly what he was talking about. And perhaps, maybe if you don't know what it's like in a mirror, maybe you've tried to look at your reflection in like a muddy puddle, and it's just dim, and what you see is not what you maybe want to see. It's just a discouraging picture. And you kind of imagine our lives are sometimes like that. They are a dim, discouraging walk with Jesus. He just seems like I can't see him very well. And I only get this little taste of what it's like to be with him. But we, despite all those things, despite how discouraging it can be, we need to still, every day, day by day, choose to spiritually abide with Jesus Christ. I'm going to talk a bit more about how we do that later, but for now, remember, we need to spiritually abide by in him. That is the start of it. If we are spiritually abiding in him, then God promises, as I say in my next point, we will abide in the fruitful vine. So the spiritually abiding, he promises, abide in me and I in you, and then you will bear fruit. So point number two, abide in the fruitful vine. So he says, I am the true vine and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. So we see that. Just because you're a branch doesn't mean that you can just relax and be like, oh, yeah, I'm saved, once saved, forever. I'm going to not think about Jesus. The branches that shrivel away, the ones that don't persist to the end, they are removed. Remember, the Christian life is a race. It's a race to the end. But if you abide in Jesus and persist in him, if you spiritually are connected to him, then he brings fruit into your life. Now, all fruiting plants, you know, they have this life cycle. You have your roots that grow into the tree or the stalk or the vine, and then leaves sprout, and then they have little orbs on them that don't look like anything nice. But then eventually, if you take care of them for long enough, depending on the plant, beautiful fruit will develop. And it's a process. It requires tons of energy. Certain plants take years for fruit to grow. For the plant, we just go out and we're like, oh, it's doing it. But it takes a ton of energy, a ton of time for plants to grow fruit. But as long as the branches are fully connected to the vine, eventually they will. Now, some plants, again, grow them fast. Some plants grow them slow. But if they're connected, they will grow fruit. And you can also think of that in volume. Some plants will grow little baby fruits. Some plants will grow many, many fruits. You can think of over the lifetime of a plant, often early on, they're very bountiful. And then as the plant ages, perhaps certain branches just don't bear as much anymore. And maybe on an individual branch, the careful gardener will begin to make little snips. This one just doesn't have the same energy anymore. It can't handle all these leaves. It can't handle all these bushels. We're going to have to snip some stuff off for this thing to keep on bearing. So there is this same pattern in the life of a Christian, where if we are connected to the vine, God will produce good works in our life. If we are abiding in Jesus, good works and obedience to him will be produced. It will look different for different branches. Some branches there'll be just this endless grapes just, you know, if you've ever seen those pictures of those grapes in other continents where the weather is way nicer, and just the bough is just leaning down almost to the ground just for the sheer volume and weight of grapes. Well, maybe you in your head know a person like that, and you can think of them. And they're like, oh yeah, that guy is like a heavy bough of grapes of good works. And or maybe you think of a person that you've known for a long time, maybe someone much older than you, and you think, you know, they were just a prayer warrior to the end of their days. And even though, oh, those are, you know, maybe not as in the front sort of fruits, but they were heavy with grapes to the end of their days because they were just praying in the spirit all the time for everybody and for other people's needs. So if you're connected to the vine, you will see those fruits grow. But yes, there are going to be seasons where there's a drought and maybe you're not going to have as many grapes. Maybe it's not going to be as easy. But as long as you're connected to the vine, the fruits will grow. So you must abide in the fruitful vine. Now, when God produces fruit in you, he actually gives you a great gift. So he produces the fruit, he produces obedience, and it connects you to something special, the ultimate antidote, the ultimate weapon against the darkness of this world. And that is his unlimited, bountiful, all-conquering joy. So we see, as we continue on, and talk more about the dangers of losing that connection to Jesus. If anyone does not abide in me, he's thrown away like a branch and withers. That's verse 6. But then it begins to talk about, so you have this obedience, and this obedience connects you to God's love and God's joy. Verse 9, as the Father has loved me, so I love you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, You will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be full. So the world, the flesh, and the devil, our adversaries, are wanting you to feel all sorts of things, and they are all the opposite of joy in God. That is what they are desperate to take away from you, is joy in God. Because the joy in God is just the pure experience of his glory and us worshiping him and understanding him for who he is. That is the state that we will be in for eternity when we are with him. And the world, the flesh, and the devil hate that. They do not want to have joy in God, and they do not want you to have joy in God, because it's all about the world, the flesh, and the devil. So you're the world, as in everyone around us. No, it's about me, 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 me. And I want you to be selfish too, because that makes me feel better. Well, then we have the flesh. The flesh says, whenever you're distracted by these spiritual things, that leaves less fun for me. And your flesh is going to fight it. I don't want you to have joy in God. I want you to have joy in food, because I feel good when you eat food. I don't want you to have joy in God. I want you to have joy in fun. Just entertain yourself. That's what makes me feel great. Your flesh is fighting against you. It doesn't want you to have joy in God. And of course, the devil. The devil is the accuser. And how the devil steals our joy from us is he attacks our salvation. He attacks our confidence in God. So he doesn't want to have us to have joy in God, because he is the person who hates God the most. We can't even understand how much the devil hates God, and he wants us to have no confidence in God and doubt God. And so he's the accuser, and he's going to come into your life, and he's going to say, you know, remember when you did this? Remember when you told this lie? Remember when you, said you were going to do something and then you didn't do it? Remember when, you know, there was the opportunity to talk to this person and you didn't? He's going to bring up every little thing you ever did, and he's constantly going to be throwing it in your face. You don't have joy in God. Remember this? You're guilty, 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 guilty. But we have access to what Jesus actually says, that it is his joy that we have access to. His joy can be in us if we abide in him. Now, we really can't understand that. The joy of God, God's own joy, can be in us. So I think of, you've got a cup, and cups just only have a specific amount of capacity. There's little cups, there's big cups, but it doesn't really matter. There is no man-made cup that can fit the ocean in it. Maybe some cups can fit a tiny bit more of the ocean in it. Some cups fit somewhat less of the ocean. There is no man-made container that has ever been built, no swimming pool, no stadium, nothing that can fit the capacity of the ocean. And so we don't even have a conception of how much joy is available for us. The God who made entire galaxies that we will never see in beauty and wonder and majesty, and they're just out there being beautiful beyond comprehension, just for his good pleasure. Only he knows. That God's joy can be ours. There are creatures in this world that have literally probably had been extinct before humans ever really knew they existed. There are bird species that have lived on random islands that we never got to witness because we just didn't ever get to that island. Humans never went there, and we never saw them. God made all these things. He makes all these things just for fun, for the pure joy of it. That joy can be ours. And of course, if we put it in a sense related to us. God has the amount of joy in, he is so joyful about saving sinners, about saving you, about defeating sin in you, i.e., for the joy that was set before him. God values that joy so much, I'm so excited to save these sinners, I will die to make it happen. For the joy of saving you, he went to the cross. For that overflowing fount of joy, he goes, I am persisting through the very wrath of God to save you. And that is the joy that is available for us. Now, of course, how much of that can we actually comprehend? We just can't comprehend it. We just can't. But the more we taste, the more we drink, in a sense, our cup gets bigger, the more that we keep it full with that love and joy from God, the more we try and understand it, we expand how much joy we can receive. And then someday, when we're in heaven, we'll just live in it all the time. The joy of God, the glory of God, it'll just be flowing in us and through us, and we'll look at each other and see the glory and joy of God flowing out of each other, and we'd be like, wow, look at the glory and joy of God flowing out of you. Because it'll be flowing out of every Christian, just that luminosity of Christ's glory and joy. So, how do we take these things and make them something that we actually practically do day by day? How do we make it practical, something that is cosmically beyond our understanding? We got to bring it down to our nitty-gritty. So, first of all, abiding in the Spirit, which is the foundation that leads to fruitfulness and joy, means we need to be living with Jesus in our spirits from day to day. And practically, that means the super obvious things that you are filling in the blanks in your head, praying to God, reading his word. That's the super obvious things. But I would take it even further, act like he's there with you. He is there with you, but always act like he's there with you. When you're in the car and there's nobody there, he's there too, with you. So instead of talking to yourself, instead of shouting at other drivers, talk to Jesus. He's there. When you're having a difficult time at work, when maybe a client or a customer or a boss is asking you to do impossible things, or maybe you tried to do your best and it didn't work out, talk to Jesus while you do it, while you fix your issue. He's there with you. His Spirit is in you. He is abiding with you. Talk to him. Now, as you pray in your quiet times and as you read the Bible, that is how you get to know him in a deep way, so you know him better for the times when you are casually talking to him. That is what I would say is the strategy. So Rod brings this up a lot, which is have a daily quiet time. And it's true that you could not have a quiet time every day and still know the Lord. But as someone who has done physical training, there are optimal ways to train that will always be better than the other ways to train. And the big thing is consistency. So if you're doing strength training, there is a very specific schedule that the human body works on. It takes a specific amount of time for nearly everyone to build muscle again. And so if you do a strength program and then you just are not consistent, and then 3 months later, you're like, I didn't grow as much. This program is not very good. Well, it's because you
missed a bunch of training sessions and you were inconsistent. So if you feel in your life, I just don't feel as close to Jesus very much. I haven't, you know, I don't know even what that's like to really talk to him much. Well, your training sessions where you're getting that deep in the Word and deep prayer, that's kind of like that's your training session of real spiritual muscle building for the times when you don't have a Bible around and you just need to talk to God in that emergency time or in that quiet time, in the Bible, in serious prayer. That's how you practice to get good at it for the other parts of your life. So, abide in the Spirit. Abiding in the Spirit, walking with Jesus, will bring fruitfulness. So, this principle is super easy to understand because we do this all the time, where if you hang out with someone enough, you begin to be like them. So, I'm sure parents, you all remember times when your child was hanging with somebody and you said, think to yourself, or maybe you just said, you can't hang out with Bradley anymore. Bradley is a bad influence. You've been saying things that you don't say normally. You've been doing things you don't do normally. And they are all suspiciously exactly like what Bradley says it does. Because you hang out with Bradley, you become like Bradley. Well, if you walk with Jesus, if you abide with Jesus, you become like Jesus. You become more in his image. And so the fruit appears. As you are with him, as you walk with him, the obedience is actually something that God himself creates in you. Because the more you are with him, the more you want to do what he wants to do, instead of wanting to do what your flesh wants to do. Because when you're driving and someone cuts you off, if you actually are living there with Jesus, if he is with you, and I'm gesturing like as if he's sitting in the seat, but obviously the place you should gesture when you're thinking about Jesus is your soul. If he's there with you, you're not going to be flipping out at that guy. Because you and Jesus are going to be fine. You don't need to be mad at that man. Jesus is in your heart. The more you walk with Jesus, the more you'll be like him. The more that fruit will grow. So, abiding in the Spirit, then you abide in fruitfulness. And so you walk with Jesus and you do the things that Jesus likes. You do less of the things that Jesus doesn't like. You do more of the things that Jesus likes because you guys are together all the time. And then finally, the more that you abide with him, that he's around, the more you will see his joy because the more you will see the world like he sees it. So things like someone cutting you off in traffic or having a bad day at work will be less impactful to you because you will be living with the one who has this beautiful eternity for you forever in joy all the time. I don't know if, I hope that you have had the experience where you've been having a bad day and then someone that really loves you comes and just cheers you up in an instant with a word or a hug or a joke. Perhaps you can remember one of those times where, you know, you were just having the worst day and then maybe you had one of these experiences where you forgot it was your birthday or you forgot there was a party or something. And then suddenly you go, oh, what's that cake? Or, oh, man, that joke just made my day. Or maybe even a stranger just did something nice for you for no reason. And then suddenly, oh, that just made my day. Well, you have someone with you all the time who loves you so much that he died for you. And he is willing to give you those good gifts all the time. And so many of them are around us all the time, and we don't even think about them. So William Wilberforce was a really interesting man. So he is
an abolitionist, and there's a movie about him. I think it's called Amazing Grace, because he was really good friends with John Newton, who wrote Amazing Grace. Now, William Wilberforce, he was intensely passionate about stopping the slave trade, and he worked his whole life to stop the slave trade. Meanwhile, he was one of the sickest dudes around. So William Wilberforce could not lift up his own head. He had a brace to hold his head up, because otherwise his head flopped forward like this. He had just horrific bouts of sickness where he would be in pain for days and days and days. And in many ways, he spent a huge chunk of his life in pain and fighting for something that didn't work out for a really long time. So he was trying to fight for this incredible thing. Let's stop the slave trade. There are human souls being transported across the ocean as cargo, like that despicable thing. And people fought him tooth and nail. And it was failure after failure for years. Now, in that movie, Amazing Grace, Ewan Griffith is the actor, and he plays this moody, desperate man who's just, I've got to free the slaves, and this is so hard, and I'm in pain. That's not what William Wilberforce was like at all. The historical William Wilberforce, people described arriving at his house, and his house was filled with the laughter of children. And why were those children laughing? Because William Wilberforce, in his pain, was constantly running around and playing with children. William Wilberforce was constantly singing hymns and of praise. Contemporaries remarked at how, no matter who it was, you could go and talk to William Wilberforce at any time, and he was the most wonderful, warm, joyful, pleasant, happy person to engage in any sort of conversation about anything. William Wilberforce wrote a book about how God's glory and his spirit changes your desires. It changes your desires because your nature no longer becomes a nature bent towards sin, death, evil things. It becomes a nature that is bent towards God. And so William Wilberforce, who, as we all were, selfish, inward-looking, became selfless and outer-looking as he delighted in Jesus. So instead of being sad that he was in constant horrific pain, he would spend time looking at spiderwebs and wondering in the glory of his maker. Instead of being discouraged by the horrific battle that he had with the evil, evil, evil men who were intent on perpetuating this evil that they were doing, he trusted in the Lord and had joy that God would bring it to an end himself. He was a joyful man, because your physical circumstances aren't what's holding you back from having joy in your life. It's not having enough of Jesus. That is what is holding you back. Someone can be in intense physical pain and have pure, wondrous joy in God. It's all there for you. So if you were a thirsty, man crawling through the desert, and you're saying, one drop, one drop, but there was a giant freshwater lake beside you, you can kind of imagine that sometimes we are crawling beside this lake, just a little joy, just a little joy. And Jesus is saying, the lake of my endless joy is right there all the time with you. Just drink. Just abide with me. Abide in my spirit. And that endless joy is there for you, from me, no matter where you are. The disciples were about to go into a world this is just, you know, 10 verses later-ish. Jesus says, you're about to see what the world does to me. You're going to see it with your own eyes. That's what they're going to do to you. And that must have been rough. Especially when you have someone and you're, oh, yeah, this is God. He is not just saying this as a suggestion. He's saying, as they persecuted me, they will persecute you. That's not just a generic term. For the disciples, that was a prophecy. All of you, except one, will be killed like I was killed. That is a prophecy that Jesus makes for the disciples. We all have different ways in our lives. Some people's lives, you may already know the taste of incredible darkness. Or perhaps that darkness is on the horizon. Maybe, like most lives, your life has been kind of like this. Sometimes times are dark, sometimes times are good. But in the dark times, and in the times that we feel that things are great, abide in the Lord through it all. Share the good times with Him. Share the dark times with Him. He will bring fruit in your life, and He will give you joy. In the good times, you'll be able to enjoy it together with Him. We're about to have a lunch downstairs. That is a time of joy. Jesus is in that room because Jesus is in the spirit of every Christian, and of course, He also dwells everywhere as well. Jesus holds together every molecule. But Jesus is in that room in joy with us just in a few minutes. Isn't that wonderful? Jesus is there with us. And when you are standing beside the bed of that friend, when you are standing beside the bed of that family member, Jesus is there too, abiding with you. Joy doesn't always look like happiness. It sometimes looks like happiness. But if you are abiding with Jesus, you will still feel His joy even in that moment, even in those hard moments. Because the penetrating grace and love of God will be in your spirit. Let's pray. Dear Lord, thank you that you have said that you will abide with us. You will live with us, even unto the end of the age, that is, even unto the end of the world. So even in our lives, when if we feel that the world is ending, we know that you are with us. And Lord, in the good times, in the times when we feel that the sun is shining, may it be in our hearts just a radiance of joy to us that you are blessing us with sunshine, Lord. Lord, as this service comes to an end, I pray that everyone here would commit their lives to you, Lord, recommit their lives to you as Christians, and that if there is someone here who does not know your joy, who hasn't experienced it, who hasn't seen it, I pray that they would turn away from their sin and that they would repent and believe that you will come and live in their hearts forever to walk with them. Your precious name, pray all these things. Amen.